Hey, good morning, everybody. I'm Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio on May 3rd, 2022. So nice to have you with us today. We're going to have a lovely show with my friends from Fielding International. We're going to talk about a project they did. This is interesting. Down at Eden Park Elementary School in, I think it's Cranston, Rhode Island. All right, I know it's Rhode Island. All right. And Enrico and Corrine, my two guests today, work at Fielding, and they're school designers, all right? Fielding International is an architectural firm and a design firm for educators, for schools, all right? And they built the school around the idea of project-based learning and designed outdoor spaces for learning. And we're going to talk about the combination of designing the space plus the project learning and see how it all worked out. It's going to be an interesting show. Okay, with Corrine, and I hope I'm pronouncing that right, Corrine. I'll bring you on in a second, and also Enrico. All right, so bear with me for a second while I tell everybody. I'm happy to say that over at ACE-Ed, the newest issue of Equity and Access, our online journal is over there. We just put it up there yesterday, and it is an absolutely wonderful issue. Please go over there, check it out. Just click on the cover of the magazine. You'll see it there, again, at ace-ed.org, where you can also link over to seltoday.org, all about social-emotional learning, and also teacher-retention.com, which is something very important to us, this whole thing on teacher retention and recruitment, getting people involved in education. We're at a real shortage, and we are really focusing on that these days. It's an equity issue. It's an education issue. It's an economic issue. Please go over there, check out what we're doing. Okay, it's all available to you at ace-ed.org. You can link, and we'll put the podcast over there as well. Just so you know, over there at ace-ed.org, we're excited to be working on our inaugural Excellence in Equity Awards, which is going to help us spotlight and celebrate high-impact work across K-12 education. We got 20 different award categories. You can even nominate yourself or a colleague, okay, covering every angle of equity in K-12, 10 categories for educators and support staff from every role in our school you can think of, and 17 categories for companies and nonprofits. Companies can nominate their products. Teachers can nominate products. Companies can nominate teachers. Teachers nominate companies. Teachers each other. Nominate yourself. It's all over there, and you can go over to ace-ed.org, and there is a link, but it's ace-ed.org/awards. Find out all the information. If you want more information, email us. It's at awards@ace-ed.org. And I hope you take that seriously because we're having a great time with it. We're getting a lot of response with it. It's pretty cool to be honored. All about equity in education. We don't want to let that fall by the wayside. It's incredibly important this day and age especially, okay? ace-ed.org. Everything's there. And without further ado, I'm going to ask Ms. Heroes, as soon as I get this, Corrine, how do I pronounce your first name? Am I doing it right? What's going on? Corrine? Hello? I'm having this trouble again.
What's oh, hi. Do you hear me?
Oh, I hear you now. Hi.
Oh, okay.
I had trouble,
yes,
I had trouble this morning
job.
On
yes.
the first show. Wait, I had trouble this morning on the first show. I couldn't hear my guest. I've had to reschedule the show. I thought I was having it again, but you're there. Thank you. Hello. How am I doing on your name?
Hi. My name is Karen, and yes, you're doing great. Yeah, don't worry about it. Yeah.
Thank you,
Corrine.
I'd like to pronounce.
Yeah.
That's all right. Good to have you here. Yeah. Thanks for being here today. Rico, are you here?
Yes, I am. Hi, Larry.
Hi, Enrico, and I can hear you perfectly, and I'm so glad I can because we had this crazy trouble on the opening show today. I knew I just couldn't hear my guest, and he couldn't hear me, so I guess everything's okay now. This is good news. How's Enrico, how's Rhode Island looking today? Sunny and bright? Cloudy? Rainy?
Cloudy and rainy, actually.
Yeah.
No sunny and bright today over here.
Same here in Maine. I was hoping it was a little different 3 hours south of me, but I guess not. Okay, so we'll just move on from there. It's okay. You guys design spaces. Corrine, what do you do over there? Tell
yes.
us what your job is as a project manager at Fielding International. What do you do?
Yes, so we are an architecture educational firm. So what we do is, in general, as a project manager, We're pretty much looking over the general scope of work. So it starts from our schematic stage, you know, talking with clients, trying to figure out what they want. And then we go in, you know, start making a team, talking about schedules, a lot of schedules, as a board project manager described. Then eventually we get decide general direction of the team and trying to push the rest of the designing team forward. And yes, there's some, like, you know, work-related reviews and stuff we do for the architectural review. But aside from that, my primary job is going to be pushing a team to make sure everyone's going in the right direction.
How long have you been doing this? How long have you been involved in this?
I would say probably close to 6 years.
Wow. Incredible. Yeah. Well, Enrico, how long have you been working over at Fielding?
So I've been at Fielding now a full year, full-time, and I was an assistant designer, so an intern, for about a year and a half before I joined the firm full-time.
And you went to RISD, Rhode Island School of Design, right?
Correct.
Good man. It's a great school, I got to tell you. Okay, what do you think of design? You know, you studied everything when you were there. I'll just ask you this. What do you think of the world of designing schools? You're a young guy. What do you think of it?
I think it's interesting because it's the reason for which I was attracted to designing schools and designing spaces for children in general is, you know, it's not something that's really part of architecture school. There weren't children ever in architecture school. It was always adults, high-end, residential, a lot of office spaces. But there was never really a place for the youngest people that live in our world. And so I kind of asked myself a question, you know, is there someone who does this? Is this an avenue that I can pursue? And then through the help of one of my professors who actually worked for the Rhode Island School Building Authority, I found out that there are firms like Fielding that design spaces for learning and kind of make children's lives the key mission in architecture and design.
And I just must ask, since you brought it up, what got you interested in designing for younger people? That's really interesting. I find that interesting.
I think, let's put it this way, young people are a lot more fun to design for than adults. I would much rather design for a child than design for an adult any day. But I think also just the idea that it's an underrepresented and underserved population in architecture. I think many architects shiver at the idea of being in a room with children and asking children what they want
most people
to see in the world. And, you know, but I think it's a great opportunity, and there's a lot that can be done that hasn't been explored yet. So I think it's also a part of architecture where we can just do a lot and invent our own ways of working.
Wow, that's a great answer. And Kareem, you're a project manager. Did you learn as you design schools? Are you an educator or are you an architect, a designer? What's your background, Kareem?
Yes, my background is architectural design. Actually, before I started working actually for FI, I was working as a summer intern for, you know, the GA pretty much for 4 years. And then I started out as architectural designer for a few years. And after that, I got more likely elevated into the project management role because we had a lot of job back in there. So
you're into you're into education and architecture, both of you. I love this. And now, all right, let's talk about this. I'll go back to Enrico. I'm going to switch between the two of you. Enrico, project-based learning. Okay, you're a graduate of RISD. You have no idea what project-based learning is. And suddenly you're designing schools, okay, and at Eden Park Elementary, and it's Cranston, right? Cranston, Rhode Island, right?
Mm-hmm. Correct, yes.
Okay, so all of a sudden you're assigned by the big hoo-has. I know all the guys over at Fielding, all right? Obviously the school wants to be project-based learning as a practice. Talk about what you learned, okay, and how you designed around that. I'll start with Enrico.
Yeah, I think the thing that's fascinating about project-based learning is it's a practice that allows children and students to work the way we do every day. You know, our office runs on projects. We organize our work around projects. And so all project-based learning is it's a way for students to acquire deeper knowledge through exploration of what we call real-world challenges or authentic challenges. So when we work with students, instead of posing hypothetical questions of, you know, what if your school were, I don't know, on Mars, we actually ask them, what if your school had an environmentally sustainable outdoor learning space? This is what we work on, actually, Corinne and I, with Eden Park students. We ask them sometimes, what if your school had ways to better engage all types of learning modalities? And students really take these challenges seriously because they are given agency to discuss something that to them is real and that is able to then help them apply the abstract knowledge that they are learning in their other classes.
And that's exactly right. In the school, by the way, for a kid, is their world, especially an elementary school kid. Okay, that's what your whole world kind of revolves around, your social world, your learning world, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, Corinne, so knowing, take on what Enrico just said, okay, and then put that into design. So the kids want to do something sustainable. I'll just say that. What's the next step? What do you guys do next at Fielding? This is cool.
Well, yeah. So the activity we do encourages them to do or by conduct their own research. So in case of the Eden Park project based learning, it was done as a one section of the classes curriculum spaces they have. So twice a week they have a time to work on it. And most of the time they do their own research and consult with the teachers. Then once a month we actually have the specialist review. And that's the part that we actually did settling with the people who we also work with. So it wasn't only architectural designers who get involved with the Eden Park project-based learning. We actually invited Dan Biggs from the Western Assumption. He's a landscape architect. We work closely together on the Eden Park project as well. And and that obviously do, and obviously, but having these structure as the PBL was, we actually divide the students into different teams and the few professionals rotate around all the teams, so they do get different aspects of the professional specialist like ideas, because architecture is one way of approach, but landscape architects have a different approach. And we also had our interior designer, Gloria, as a part of the specialist group. So then everyone is going to get a holistic approach for the you know, review process.
Go ahead. Are you done?
No, go ahead. Yeah, I'm
Thank
done.
You. Okay, I didn't mean to interrupt you before. I apologize for that. So, well, back to Enrico, okay? Enrico, you've got these ideas. You give the kids agency, and I do love that, okay? And they give you agency. I love that, too, okay? But also you have to – there's a school district involved. There's a school involved. There's a principal. There's teachers and everybody else. How do you work with all of those people?
I think that's a very interesting question because – what we try to do, especially with project-based learning, is we ask that adults dedicate time, and I think time is the biggest thing we can give to students as a form of acknowledgement and respect. So what we did, for example, at Eden Park is we actually brought in the manager of facilities and capital projects at Cranston Public Schools, and we asked him to not only listen to the student presentation, but also we basically asked him to engage with every group and kind of offer commentary and reflections on what the group had done, both because I think children feel, of course, validated when adults kind of not only listen to their ideas, but show that they have active interest in what the children are doing. But the other big thing was then a lot of the ideas that the students proposed were actually then things that were taken seriously by administration and people who are higher up in the district. The best example, and I think Corinne and I joke about this a lot, you know, if Corinne and I propose a treehouse in a school, it's most likely going to get removed from the project. If a child asks for a treehouse, we're building that treehouse.
That's funny. Okay, how true. For good sakes, and Corinne, I'll pronounce your name better than I was before. I was doing Corinne. We're going to do Corinne from now on. Okay. So do you feel like you're Corinne, do you feel like you're an educator or do you feel like you're a school designer?
I would say I'm doing the on the school designer aspect for the all the jobs. But and while Enrico is more of the he does both praise and he's doing the more proficient on that educational aspect.
So, do you like the combination of the two?
I mean, I definitely be interesting that because, I think that our job has more meaning when we do both. And as I Enrico mentioned earlier, like usually the schools and students are usually underserved as a part of a client group. Whenever we work with schools, I mean, as an owner of the project, we are always dealing with adults. But what truly matters is the actual occupants. It's like more like designing hospital for the doctors rather than designing for the patients. I feel like that should be other way around to begin with, and with medical fields, that's been always the case, that we are one of the few people who actually do approach the schools in the right way when it comes to architecture. That's my take on my practice as a student.
It's really amazing what you're doing, and at the end, I'll go back to Enrico now. At the end, Enrico, what was the end? Talk to me about the end of the project. What manifested at the end, so to speak?
Yeah. So the way the project ended was, as I mentioned, we brought in stakeholders from Cranston Public Schools, and we asked them to listen to what the students had to say. We also, I think, we allowed the students to understand how to communicate their ideas clearly, concisely, and completely. I think that was one of the big real-life skills.
I'm going to stop you for a second. How old were these kids?
They were fifth graders, so they were between 9 and 10 years old.
Wow, that's something.
I think, might I add, these were fifth graders, and this was their first full year back from COVID. We were all still masked up when we were doing the project. It was their first real life interaction with people outside of their classroom teachers that they had as during their back to school time after COVID. But to go back to your question, the way we approach this is there was a very big lesson learned for these kids, but there was also a lot for us. When the project was over, for example, the kids said, we want more. We want to do more. They realized that they now have a say in what they're in the school's future. So one of the big examples is as we were designing the exteriors of the new gym that is being built for the school, the students asked if they could provide input. So they actually became kind of co-pilots of the exterior elevations of the building that I was working on as a designer. But on top of that, I think something that was interesting was we then had internal conversations where we actually, both with Corinne, but also Jill Akers, our principal of education.
Oh, I know Jill.
We talked about, she's great. But we talked about, for example, exploring additional funding and grant opportunities to actually bring these kids' projects to life. As I said, when a student or when a child this much effort into work, it's surprisingly easy to find a way to make things happen. And so we actually started having conversations and started researching whether there are funding opportunities that are geared specifically to projects that are co-designed with children, for example.
Were there?
There are, actually, yes.
Really?
There's a lot of surprising organizations that fund projects. But also, especially now that we have entered this new era, which it's not, but it seems like to a lot of people, where finally social-emotional learning matters, I think priorities have also shifted when it comes to, for example, how a district spends their money to both construct buildings and upkeep their facilities. I think there is a deeper understanding that the spaces where we learn matter. And, once you build the space, that's great. But then there's a lot of work that goes into making sure the space can keep fulfilling the mission that it was built for. And so I think all of these opportunities are emerging from COVID, which has been a terrible experience. for sure. I think no one had a fun time during COVID.
No one
but
did.
It definitely allowed us to really rethink
what
our priorities are. And I think I entered this profession right in the middle of COVID, and it really was fascinating to see how priorities were shifting and how people were reconsidering what their priorities were for the spaces where kids learn.
Yeah, and, you know, I'll say, and I've said it before, and everybody knows this isn't that brilliant, but, you know, as bad as COVID was, and let's not forget the thousands of people, millions, hundreds
mm-hmm.
of thousands of people that got sick and died and are still sick.
Correct.
Okay, and all the economic disruption, I don't mean to play that down at all, okay? But like any event, you have to take good that comes out of it, all right? And so
mm-hmm.
it served that purpose. It was a, what's the word I'm looking for, cataclysmic,
catalyst.
I can't think of the apocalyptic event, okay? You get a chance to rethink. I can't think of the right word there, for goodness sake. But, you know, it's just really... Yeah, it's really important to that there is some good to come out of this, all right? And it's just amazing. And since I got you here, I want to ask you, we talked about the kids coming up with ideas. I just want to hear it. Enrico, you can pass it to Corinne if you want. But just from you, what were a couple of the ideas that kids came up with that you hadn't thought of?
So a couple that I remember that were particularly significant were – a lot of spaces outdoors that would engage, for example, growing food and understanding where our food comes from.
Wow.
That's one of
wow.
the ones that really stuck with me. I don't know, Corinne, do you remember any other ones that were particularly popular or that kind of we discussed with your groups?
I would say there's some particularly popular one or not. I feel like lots of the team has their own strengths. I mean, some of them are more of the what they want, but they are also like kind of main theme called ecological. That was part of their theme for their PBL or sustainable. So, like for me, I guess I would say if I have to pick one, like surprisingly, there's the more of the research space that kids wanted rather than the cool place they wanted. That is, I would say,
mm-hmm.
more of the take away from it. And, you know, I don't know your childhood was, but a lot of the kids didn't enjoy gardening when I was a kid, and I was wasn't particularly diligent student either. I'd like to rather doodle on my sketchbook. I was one of those kids rather than listening to lectures. But it's definitely true that, like, it's maybe due to us, you know, being, you know, pretending as if you have too much effect on them, but the Eden Park elementary school kit that we had PBL with was already in the building that we designed for and then knew about the building for a few years. So hopefully like that might have motivated them to actually, you know, learning more than what they used to do. And maybe it's possible that, as Dennis mentioned, like the COVID might have actually, you know, drives them to more to be dining outside more because that's their,
mm-hmm.
you know, and also probably appreciate school even more than before too because during quarantine, everyone was doing remote Zoom, you know, phone calls, which is probably, I assume, it's no fun at all. You know, you get to sing with your classmates, but, you know, you're finally in person and you're talking about outdoor learning space and you don't even have to worry about masks or other restrictions too much.
Good
and,
point.
You know, as a result, what they want to do was joining even more. Stadia, like, there's a real life out there, you know. Once they get COVID. And
you know, it's interesting.
The
world's changing. You have to look at it differently. And, you know, so let me ask you, you're both, you know, do what you do. Enrico, now that you did this, what's the next step for you in terms of when you design the next space for any given school? What have you learned?
I think for us, the biggest lesson, which it seems very simple when you say it, but it really does matter. It's just listen. I think that's the only way where we'll be able to design spaces that are meaningful. And I think the idea of listen is also paired with the idea of it's not a one-size-fits-all approach. It should be a custom way of working every time. I'm not saying we should reinvent how we design that process works. And so we should capitalize on design thinking as a process that works, but definitely approaching every project as its own project and not a copy-paste or, you know, a brushing out of the archives something that we've done before just because it worked in that context.
You know, that's interesting because we deal a lot here, obviously, with equity in K-12 education. And that's the whole point of it. You give every student, if I may, what they need. That's really the definition of equity. Okay? And you just extrapolate that out to with 100 kids or 500 kids or whatever and put them in a building. Okay? Every group of kids is different. All right?
Yeah.
And from the neighborhood, et cetera, et cetera. And it's just interesting how you have to look at all this stuff. And I love that you both said, you know, you got to listen. And you listen to the teams, et cetera. We got to go, gang. You were terrific. Enrico, thank you. This was great. I hope you had a good time.
Thank
Corinne,
you so much.
Thank you. Okay? Corinne, thank you.
Oh, thank you.
Oh,
thank
terrific.
You so much.
You're welcome, guys. Yeah. You guys take care, and I hope the weather clears up in Rhode Island. Thank you.
Fingers
thank
crossed.
You.
Thank you.
Be good,
bye-bye.
Guys. Bye-bye. From the nations, bye. From the nation's smallest state. There you go. Okay. Big ideas from the smallest state. Fielding International at fieldingintl.com. Okay. Great folks. I work with them all the time. We'll archive. My voice is scratching. We'll archive over at ace-ed.org and check out all the things we're doing, including the new awards program over there. My name's Larry Jacobs. Thanks for listening.